you have to wait, you're going to say, well, I'm going to get out my $5,000 and get my eyes done. Yeah. And that's what this is about. It's about creating a market in small places, tinkering around the edges of the public system to a point where more and more services, as the healthcare system, as research is done, all of these things happen, more and more things aren't covered. It creates the market.
Let me amplify what Shannon has just said with something that I investigated over a period of time about a year and a half ago. Remember that when Shannon was speaking of New Zealand, the neoliberal agenda, which we imported wholesale into this province, was still very much in play. So when electricity was deregulated or restructured, excuse me, in this province, it created the conditions for a company called Enron to come here and use Alberta as a proof of concept to later defraud the state of California. I'm just putting that out. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying that's a fact. And that the individual who is in charge of creating the conditions for this deregulation is one of the leadership hopefuls for the Progressive Conservative Party. I will not name him by name, but you approve. Because these guys play for keeps, okay? So there's a certain amount of discussion that may have to be, and I think Mr. Campbell will remember some of the things that Tommy Douglas had to do was to encrypt some things that were known in the culture, but nevertheless, through the gift of storytelling, was to be able to tell these stories in such a way that people understood without naming names. All right, so against this backdrop of what Shannon has just said, I want to go back to this leadership governance thing, okay? So, and we're engaged in cognitive dissonance because we're all frothing here and engaged in this process. But I have to ask, what's this really all about? I mean, I don't know. But I do know enough about the history of this governance model here in this province is to tightly control the information, constrain it, get the smart people talking about things that really don't matter in the long term because this is what we're doing over here. And so I ask this question based on these facts. I don't know how many of you in the class know this, but how many of you are there from the province of Ontario by chance? Is there any hands being raised? Okay, you would know if you're from the province of Ontario that you do not pay health care premiums. Mm-hmm. You do not have to apply to defray, if you're a student, a health care premium. Because the reason why you don't have to pay health care premiums is what my colleague Peggy Morton said a few moments ago. It was decided in the Golden Triangle, or the Golden Horseshoe, excuse me, in Ontario, that for the auto industry to succeed in the United States, one advantage we had was that we did not have to pay health care premiums, which is beginning to sink in terms of retirement programs, companies like General Motors.
Right.
All right? Have you heard any discussion about this whatsoever right now? That the competitive advantage, not only for Alberta, but for Canada, is the fact that we have a publicly subsidized healthcare system, which makes not only our cars built better, but made us competitive with our friends in the United States. And I do say they're friends. Don't forget that. These are our neighbors. But this discussion is not anywhere on the table, and I want to know why. I mean, you brought it up, but that's a very critical, important point. That gave us a competitive advantage. This is a governance system in this province that insists that we have the Alberta advantage. Why would we broker that away?
Well, who says they're going to?
I didn't say they're going to.
See, I can't get anyone to it's difficult to get people to discuss this because we frame this debate in terms of American system bad, Canadian system good.
Right.
I think that's a real mistake.
I do too.
First of all, what I said at the beginning when I talked about the Liberal government and Chiuli, okay? We've been sold this bill of goods that if we want a public system, it has to be rationed.
Right.
And that's the basis on which, I mean, that is one of the basis of the demand for private health care, because those with the wealth are saying, well, fine, you know, the poor can wait, but I don't want to have to. And I've got the money, and I don't want to have to travel to the United States. That doesn't mean, let's think about it this way. Mm-hmm. Does Syncrude actually want to take on the cost of health care for all its employees?
But mm-hmm. Let's reframe that ever so briefly.
Yeah.
Does Syncrude want to acquire the premiums that we pay to the province of Alberta
mm-hmm.
and use that to amortize over, you know, the fact that our public health care system works on the idea that nobody's going to get sick all at once.
But those premiums are a small portion of what they would pay
that
in
may
an
be
American
true, but,
system.
But then
very
I,
small
but
portion.
But what I'm getting at, that's the slippery slope we're going
okay,
down.
Okay, but if we look at that, that they're a very small portion, okay, those premiums, that's not where they want to go. Do they want another system where their executives can go there? Do they want the choice of saying, well, this guy is going to be on my on disability insurance for a year waiting for, so we'll pay to send him to the private system, okay? So they want that flexibility for their top guys and where they want it. But do they want, like, public health care is a two-edged thing, okay? As every public program in a capitalist society, it's a way of providing to the capitalist the educated, healthy workforce and the infrastructure which allows them to make profits. And so when we talk about who are the interests here, I think we can't lose sight that the insurance companies are only one of the competing interests. The private healthcare monopolies are a competing interest, but there are also all those other monopolies. And we're not hearing from, you know, the CCE, whatever they're called now, you know, they used
Katie
to be.
Katie Castle, chief right. executive.
We're not hearing from them dismantle the whole healthcare system.
Mm-mm.
We're not hearing that, and we're not going to hear it, because they consider that a subsidy to them.
Yes, and that's the point I wanted to get
and
at.
And they're going to keep that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Hi. Okay. Oh, yeah. Now it's lit up. Okay. My name is Melanie. Hello. Nice to see you in Edmonton and Pitcher Creek. It's been very interesting and very informative. I just wanted to kind of maybe throw some fuel on the fire or just add my 2 cents. As a person who it makes very little money because I'm a poor student and I have student loans, just like probably everybody else in the classroom. I'm shocked at how little taxes I pay, but quite frankly. I calculated it just recently. I think I pay about 12%. And I lived in a society for 4.5 years just about where I was lucky to take home half my paycheck, Denmark, as a matter of fact. And I know I keep bringing this up and the people in the class are probably sick of hearing about this. But
to me, please talk.
When I lived in Denmark, it was never something in the front of my mind, but in the back of my mind was always the knowledge that should anything happen to me, should I be in an accident and become disabled, no longer be able to work, I don't care what, there was a social safety net. There was something that protected me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gave away huge amount of money every month to the government, but I was satisfied with that because I knew that just in case I had something in return. If I had to go to the doctor, that was no problem. I could go see my doctor at any time, provided he or she had time, but I could go see my doctor at any time for any issue. I could go to the hospital if I needed to. I could collect benefits, like I said, if I became disabled or anything like that. I could live in subsidized housing because I was an apprentice, and so I was able to live on my own, etc. There was just a huge amount of stuff that I got in return for that, and I was happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not perfect, especially the healthcare system. Right now, in fact, there's still a huge issue in Denmark with, for instance, cancer treatments. Cancer treatments which are available in Sweden just across the Sound, and have been for several years, are still not available in Denmark because the Danish system insists on conducting its own testing before certifying it for use in the healthcare system. And so there are a great many people who cross the Sound and get cancer treatments there, if they have the money.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not saying that there aren't problems that have to be dealt with, but it can work. And something else I wanted to mention is that something very much akin to the Third Way has been functioning for the past almost 70 years in Germany.
Can I respond to that?
And it's not perfect. Most of my family lives there. I know they have big complaints with a lot of things, but it's another way to, or another section to look at. Denmark is very much like Sweden, and you had mentioned Sweden previously, Shannon, as a public system where you're not, the doctors aren't allowed to go between systems. And I just thought I'd throw my two cents in there, and that was pretty much it. Oh, and I wanted to mention that actually just today on the news, I heard about a study that was done in California that I guess some business person brought up here in Alberta today. There was a study done in California just recently. I believe it was by a bank. And they were studying, I think, the premiums that they pay for their employees who have a family of four, for instance, were like $10,000 a year. No, $40,000 a year. Yeah, $40,000 a year. And they pay like, I don't know, $1,000 a year here or something like that. It was a ridiculously small sum in comparison to the what you pay in the American system. And so there were a great many companies, including this bank, which had actually stopped providing health care to their employees. And I didn't get any figures. It was just a short report on the radio. But the cost in turn, in terms of work hours, et cetera, for the people who then got sick, who had foregone getting any health care whatsoever on their own because they could not afford it, was 10 times higher, or some astronomical figure higher than what the company would have paid $40,000 a year in premiums if they had actually provided healthcare service. So I did hear something about it, Don.
Thank you very much for drawing that to our attention. I really found that enlightening. And don't hesitate to tell us about Denmark or Germany. Deutschland, go ahead, please.
That was on CBC today, by the way.
Well, that doesn't make you a bad person to say that, okay? All right.
Thank you.
But Shannon's wanted to leap in here about Germany. Please do.
A little bit, but also I think there's a couple of other international things that maybe we should keep in mind. There's a paper by a woman named Colleen Flood that is an analysis of the Chiaoli decision, and she's through Osgoode Hall, she's a health law policy professor.
And Osgoode Hall, that's in Toronto, associated with York University, University.
Yeah. Yeah. So Colleen Flood wrote a paper kind of picking apart the Chiaoli decision based on some of the erroneous assumptions that the bench made in their majority decision. And one of them was that they interpreted countries which have something called substitutive health insurance.
Yes.
As being the same as other countries such as Australia, New Zealand, or potentially what Dr. Chiaoli wanted to have happen in Canada, which is parallel insurance. Now, what happens in Netherlands and Germany, it's a little bit different in Germany, and I'm not as solid on that one, so you'll have to maybe read about it in Colleen Flood's paper. And I highly recommend you do, because she really picks apart how the Supreme Court really royally screwed up in this decision. But but in the Netherlands and in Germany, if you make under a certain amount of money, you are covered through a public health care insurance system. If you make over a certain amount of money, you get nothing. And so you have to buy substitutive insurance. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of insurance companies that you deal with. This is not insurance that allows you to go to different doctors and get to the front of the line. It is not, in other words, queue jumping insurance, like the British, Australian, and New Zealand model, which is the one that is proposed for Canada.
Now, point of clarification, are you obliged to buy that insurance?
Yeah. Yes, you're obliged to buy it. So if you're over a certain income level, then you have to buy this insurance. Generally, it comes through your employment because, well, you're not making all of that much of money unless you have a good job.
And the logic is, if you're driving an automobile, you need insurance regardless.
Exactly. So that's kind of how it works. But in terms of taking a step back and looking at our role as global citizens and our role in the global economy, as students, you folks are students of political economy, and so you've probably engaged with the various arms of the WTO, in particular the General Agreement on Trade and Services. And perhaps more pernicious than Chapter 11 threats under NAFTA are the threats, and you'll have to forgive me, I don't remember the article number of the GATS that deals with health care, but there are several. And basically, Canada, Australia, and other countries have negotiated themselves an exemption under the GATS for health care and education. And basically what that means is that we are exempt from having to trade freely in services in healthcare. That doesn't mean, however, that Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade officials, Canadian ones, haven't been going around the world forcing, cajoling, cornering developing countries into committing healthcare services in their countries to GATS schedules so that we can then export healthcare services to them and make big bucks off people who are far poorer than we are. For an analysis of that, you may want to look at a group of people called the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives.
Ottawa.
And it's policyalternatives.ca. There's a really good paper on the GATS and healthcare by two gentlemen, Stephen Staples and Jim Grieshaber Otto. If you're looking at for ideas for what to write your upcoming papers on, I know you have term papers due, that might be one that you may want to look at.
Now, point of clarification, and not to cast aspersions on anything, is the Center for Policy Alternatives in Ottawa is the antithesis of the Fraser Institute's point of view. And they write from that perspective. So where you're looking, if you want to get balance your views, you would do no better than to see what the Fraser Institute boys and girls have to say, measure it against what the Center for Policy Alternatives have to say. Both are no, but I'm saying the two points of view are interesting to see, because you often wonder, like a judge who are being presented the same case with the same facts, how two different lawyers can spin it in different ways. So I strongly urge you to look at both sides of the debate. And the Center for Policy Alternatives, from my conversations over the decades, tends to come from a point of view well argued, and certainly that voice needs to be heard. But I think that's fair to say it comes from a perspective.
Andy, can I just
can I jump in? I wanted to go back to something Tony. Tony raised the question, and we sort of got away from it, about healthcare as a right. And I wanted to go back and just make a couple comments about the Chiuli decision and the charter, because I think that's one of the places where we have to be much more proactive. Because it taught us something about what the charter actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And
Peggy?
Yes.
Can you just explain what this case is? I know you've written about it.
Oh, I thought we did. I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
Excuse me. We apologize. Okay. We're sorry.
Jacques Chiuli was a physician in Quebec who took a case to the first Quebec court and then finally to the Supreme Court over the right of his patient, George Zeliotis, to have pay privately to have his hip done. And it was a narrow decision of a 4-3 decision by the Supreme Court, which said that the provision in the Quebec provision didn't deal with the charter, to life, liberty, the right and security of the person was infringed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it was a decision which really
puts a question mark.
Which really said quite straightforwardly that your right to health care is based on your ability to pay for it. It's based on your wealth.
In Quebec. And here's where this is where it gets murky. Just take one moment here for clarification, because this is important to understand, because it is that Quebec civil code is different from the rest of the country. So had this decision occurred in Saskatchewan, that would have been interesting. But anyway, please do
so. So that means that despite what anyone says, that has yet to be tested in Alberta, in BC, or anywhere else.
And perhaps this is what this is all about.
And so when we're talking about the fact that Ralph is so embarrassed by the fact that he's got the most restrictive legislation in Canada, he may be wanting to test it.
And that's what I think. This is the key thing.
So, but let's go back to so that's one aspect of this whole thing. Now, so that decision, really, if we think about it, it tells us something about the charter. And if we go back and say, what was that charter? Trudeau wanted to bring in a conception of rights without accepting the United Nations definition of a human right, that you have a right to health care, to education, to shelter, to food, to clothing, to housing, to all the things that you need to be a human person. So it was, in many ways, it's sort of at the end of the period of individual rights, you bring in the charter. But really, what the Ciulli decision shows is that there is no individual rights there. It's all about monopoly right, because really what it said was a monopoly has the right to provide this private health care, and somebody can pay for it if they have the money. And it wasn't about individual rights at all.
Well, that's an interpretation.
I'm interpreting.
It's an
attack on collective rights,
yeah.
Right? And in my opinion, it's really raises the question of collective rights and that collective right to health care versus monopoly right. And that's what the Ciulli decision was. So the Supreme Court came down in favor of monopoly right against the collective right of people to health care. So we really have to put this question on the agenda of what rights do you have as a human being? And then what responsibilities do we have, you know, as citizens of the world as well on that front? And so really this question is a question of opposing monopoly right and going head-to-head on that question and raising what our conception of a modern society is and the rights of people in a modern society.
Shannon, did you want
to? Yeah. Well, I just wanted to add to the Ciulli decision. The reason why we are all having this conversation right now probably stems from the Ciulli decision. And what it did was it struck down the prohibition on private insurance under the Quebec Charter. And based on some very specious argumentation by the majority on the Supreme Court, which argued that the prohibition on private insurance was unconstitutional in light of wait times. And in light of the fact that they were writing public policy in this decision, it is an awful decision, and I think we should all read it, because they very much made some huge errors when they started saying, well, they ignored some evidence from other countries. They ignored evidence of longer wait times for parallel private health insurance, while they took into account shorter wait times in systems like Germany and the Netherlands, where they have substitutive private health insurance, which is not at all what Dr. Ciulli was proposing in when he took that case to the Supreme Court. So what that case is based on is basically it gives us two doors. It can make us shorten wait times, in which case the point is moot. Or it can open the door to private health insurance.
Which effectively in Ontario, which is that now is a point that is being used by the McGuinty government right now, is that they're obliged to shorten wait times at this point. This is a dialogue and conversation that's going on in the province of Ontario right now. So the point is that this decision that was made is that if somebody's going to pull the trigger on whether or not we're going to have a public health care system in the country, chances are the trigger will be pulled here first.
Well, we've gone the furthest in our package of so-called reforms, right? I mean, BC and Quebec, in response to the Ciulli decision, they both have right-wing provincial governments as well. So they said, okay, what are we going to do? They've opened the door to some private health insurance. What they have not done is taken that step further and allowed and proposed that doctors be allowed to practice in both a private public and a private and a public system. So there's a difference there. Alberta has taken it further in introducing a market, but also making sure that if that market fails, the doctors that went and took themselves out of the public system to serve those of us who cannot pay can come back to their sweet jobs.
Okay. Let's remember, Dawn, that there are four provinces in Canada who don't have a ban on private insurance. So private insurance is not, like, there's no Canada Health Act ban mm-hmm. on private insurance. It's a provincial thing, and there's only six provinces that ban private insurance.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? So they can do all of these. The private insurance part won't be the piece on which this would go to the Supreme Court here.
Gearing down or coming towards the end. We're officially 5 minutes from the end. But Andy has a point. Andy has a point, and I'd like to go to Michelle, who's been patiently waiting, and perhaps Gordon has a few remarks. I don't know if James does. I don't think we're going to get to the phone call to Lucan, but it's been a very lively chat this evening. But Andy, do you want to say some concluding remarks?
Well, actually, I'm interested, Don, especially in your, I guess, where the dialogue was going as far as leadership and governance.
Yes.
Because I guess just as an activist, I like the whole thought of going on the offensive. And I think that the next phone calls and investigations I do will be to bring some good activists in from New Zealand and actually bring them and start to incorporate them into our the struggle here. But I am interested, frankly, we are caught up in terms, I mean, you kind of set one or the other, governance or leadership. I think that if we take this to a leadership stance, that's ideal. But frankly, at this point, we are stumped with this being a governance issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's what comes first, right? I mean, we're faced with legislation. We're faced with the inability or the relative inability. I mean, the NDP put forth a private member's bill for pharmacare. It was struck down by the Conservative government. That's not a well-known fact outside of the pointy head circles. But there are things like that where frankly, we are faced with that, with the nuts and bolts of the machine at this time. Now, I'm willing to entertain sort of organizing outside that. I'm interested in how you see that leadership unfolding, that leadership role unfolding in a system where we're faced with to start to organize doctors and especially as was said earlier, we should be training doctors and exporting them, not importing them, this kind of thing. I mean, we're so far behind that anything that works to actually organize doctors outside of our public system, it would sound like private anyways. I guess I'm just not sure what leadership means. I mean, it sounds good, but in terms of practical terms.
Andy, thank you so much for saying that. I have good news. And the good news is that starting this fall on CKUA, I will have a new series of programs on leadership. And it's all full-blown, contemporary, and I'm asking all of you, each and every one of you, is that please keep in touch with me, and I'll give you my email address. And if there's someone in the world that you think that I should talk to, and I kid you not, we can do it this way, to incorporate in this series, because I believe, this is my opinion now, this is Don Hill talking, is that we have extraordinary opportunity. I'll take off my hat, see? But the thing is, we have an extraordinary opportunity, this is my opinion, to demonstrate leadership. And I think if we can reach out to the best and brightest minds, as well-schooled and as well-educated as we are, that we can demonstrate through leadership out of a whole bunch of pickles that we put ourselves in over a decades of brine. Now, my email address, for those of you who have got a pen finally, is Hildon, Hildon, @telus.net. That's Hildon@telus.net. If there's someone anywhere in the world or a book you think you should draw my attention to, please do. The series will begin in the fall on CKUA, and of course that's available everywhere. So that's the good news, is that this is an open dialogue at this point. And I think if we prove to each other tonight that if we all enter into this canoe, we can have paddles on the left, we can have paddles on the right, but the idea is that we're both paddling with the same object in mind and moving, instead of going around in circles, is moving forward. That's the only metaphor I'd like to leave with you. Go ahead, Andy.
That sounds like and Shannon, Mel, and Jeff especially will appreciate this. That sounds like a very liberal metaphor, frankly. Paddles on this side and paddles on this side. I'll sign off on the fact that I'm pleased to hear about the show that's upcoming.
So am I.
And I think a lot of us can contribute and make it very effective. But we are still stuck, of course, with, let's face it, most people don't tune into CKUA and on.
But wait a minute, Andy, just one second. One moment there, and I want to do something here. This is very clear. I want you to be very clear about this, okay? Yes, that's true, but I have very good news for you. You listen to CKUA, and you, yes, you are a leader. Your opinion informs and forms the opinions of many other people. And if we can reach, and I'm saying no matter what political perspective you come from, is if we can talk directly to leaders, the 3 to 5% of the population whose opinions inform and form the opinions of others, then we can really make a difference. I'm not interested in being on QR or Chad. I'm not interested in parroting the particular points of view that's like a drumbeat that goes bang, 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 bang to the point where it's like a mantra and you end up in a trance. We're living in a consensus trance that needs to be broken. And I have implicit faith in you, yes, you, and others in this room today, that you will leave tonight, you will leave this, I guarantee this, and you will have a discussion amongst yourselves and say, what did I learn tonight, and what can I tell the people that I care about, what's interesting and what to do next? Because you are the leaders. Don't worry about the other people. Let's start with ourselves.
Well, on that note, man, you guys are incredibly well informed on this issue. Just met Jeff the other day on the phone, but just look over your shoulder and you want to see some leadership there. Shannon and Melanie and Michelle here.
And Jeff over here.
Yeah, I'm just meeting Jeff, and we're showing great potential. The jury's still there, though. I've had a chance to talk with Shannon and Melanie quite a bit, and we're so proud of Melanie, of course. Unbelievably proud of Melanie, but we keep that to ourselves usually. And Michelle, I've just met Michelle tonight. Do you want to say a few words, Gordon? James Moore's, this is really his conception tonight's event. So I'd like to get in a little bit from our end here in Lethbridge. Do you want to?
Well, I just wanted to say two comments. And the first one is when everyone was discussing about the employer's part. And, you know, I'm bargaining right now against Extendicare Canada, which is an Ontario favorite. And Ontario has a nursing home and related pensions plan, which is government implemented, and we're trying to get into Alberta. And their argument is, well, government can legislate the premiums on that, and we're scared, so we're not going to bring it here, although they have it in Ontario. And right now, Gil McGowan, the president of the AFL, is going across to talk about how employers will not wanting to pick up even the premiums and things like that. He'll be in Lethbridge tomorrow giving two presentations on employers. And it's really hard to collective bargain. Peggy can contest to benefits, never mind wages and things like that. So to top on health care and to collective agreements is. And the second thing is about the and leadership. I just wanted to point out again, if we're speaking about specifically healthcare in Alberta, I mean, when we look at leadership and a grassroots development, I mean, I look at somebody to be, it comes down to bad management when we look at the health regions across Alberta. And now that they're appointed, you know, where is the grassroots democracy in ensuring that the people on the bottom get heard at the top for governance or leadership for the people that we elect up there? We need to somehow make sure that what we're saying on the bottom gets to the top on all levels of governance and all levels of leadership and who we have. And, you know, when we got rid of the elected health care boards and now they're appointed, I've experienced this, especially in senior care, getting rid of long-term care, going this designated assisted living. I asked to sit down with the health board, and they're like, well, you know, we have public meetings, but we don't have to answer to you at them. We can just write you a letter later. We don't have to respond to the public. We're just going to go ahead now with our 10-year strategic plan and answer later. Now we have Extendicare, a private company, wanting to pull out of Lethbridge, getting rid of the long-term care service. We have no choice over that. Not even the Chinook Health Region, who's fighting are bickering with extended care right now, going, well, you know, we didn't ask you to close, but we need you to do this. Well, screw you, I'm going to pull out. Will that happen in the other services? You go to a hip and knee replacement clinic in your town, and they say, well, we're not making enough money, the stocks aren't there, we're pulling out of this small town service. We're going to lose control of that, and that really scares me, looking at that at long-term care.
Okay, so,
that's it.
Yeah, just a quick moment to express great gratitude at the outpouring of solid information, remarkable amount of information, and yet, forgive me if I touch a little note of criticism in this community of ours. I'm thinking now of 12 or 15 bottles there and a gallon of water that you pour like that up gets into the beer bottles. Not very much, and it gets wasted a lot. I'm regretting that I didn't hear from each one of you. And I would have been enriched by your response to some of really controversial and highly stimulating and valid opinions that we have heard tonight. I have seen in your eyes, as a teacher, some recognition of the importance of the statements that are made and your desire to, contribute to them. Melanie has been there, she is there, she's on the street, she's on the platform, she's going to Ottawa. I have great admiration for her, and I want to cite her to you as an example of what leadership is about. Go do it. Be there.
Go. Be there on...
yes, he's talking about you.
Golf Gardens, there's some kind of rally. What time?
1:30. To 2:30, following after from 2:30 to 4, a public consultation.
Yeah.
I just want to say that again, I'm embarrassing Melanie, but Michelle, but she's organized five rallies in this city, and rallies that have been brought the television stations together, brought information to the neighbor for other people to do it, and you can do it too. Why isn't there some kind of organization in this university that is talking about the kinds of things? Wonder where there is a band that would go to the rally. People will play the trumpet. We can't find them in the university. They're busy getting a degree in Rivaldi or something.
You bet.
Tony, you got to turn on your mic.
You can't hear me?
Now we can.
I just want to make special acknowledgement.
Push the button.
Okay, can you hear me or? Yeah. I just want to express acknowledgement. Thank you so much for coming, Peggy. Thank you for the leadership you've offered on this issue over many years and are continuing to do so. James Moore, would you like to say a few more remarks before
thanks.
We leave?
Dawn, your idea? You want to look?
Sorry, I can't hear you. Push your button.
Can't hear me?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I don't think it's a button issue.
Okay. Hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, so this idea of leadership and what you're talking about, the radio, this is potential that could be actualized. I think that what we're looking at is when you're talking about the cliches or the you know, the discourse that is cliche, and if people are only using that, then they're not using their own authentic voice. This is what we need more of. And this is where we start really actualizing the potential. So in a similar way, this class tonight, I want to thank everyone for joining in it, has, you know, so much conversation. Well, you know, how are you going to realize the potential technology? And we have an issue that's very right now here in Alberta. We have a local example in the privatization of healthcare of a global phenomenon. So let's see what we can. So thanks to everyone, you know, Gordon, Michelle, the people in Edmonton, because we tried to do something. And it's just an example of what's possible. So carry on, Dawn. Look forward to go and what else we can do with it.
Well, let's say that we do this again sometime sooner than later.
All right.
I don't know if you heard that, but I'm saying is I can't speak for my colleagues here, but I think we enjoyed ourselves, yes?
And you know where...
Did we learn anything? We'll have to find out in the weeks to come.
The other side is, like, we haven't reached out. We've had a very interesting chat here tonight on the texting line. We've got, you know, people in Ontario that we're probably going to try and phone, but we have to work out some of that. We've got people in... We even had somebody waiting in Beijing, China, but, you know, somebody had a technical glitch. These are the kind of things that are part of the system and kind of the types of things that we will work out as we try and actualize the potential. But I think we're really on to something. Yeah, more of it. And as we reach further with the potential of the webcast on the internet, for example, we can start to mobilize and use this more as an organizing tool for, you know, maybe passing on to Red Deer or Edmonton or something else. Look, here in Lethbridge, we're having a rally in Galt Gardens. You know, we've got together and done this much. And, you know, we inspire each other and encourage each other and so on to realize that we're not isolated in this, you know, struggle against this colossus at all. In fact, I think it's not well known, but, you know, the whole thing could be won in a weekend. We all woke up and moved together, so... That's innovation.
Okay, well, we'll see you soon.
You would find yourself in agreement with Preston Manning is that the beast that is going to be the next governance has yet to reveal its name. Thank you. Good night.
Action.